Hello, everyone, and welcome to this evening's Trillium Health Partners Community Telephone Town Hall Meeting. We are live tonight with Michelle D. Emanuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners. In addition, we're joined by Dr. Dante Mora, Chief of Staff, Catherine Hayward Murray, Senior Vice President, Patient Care Services, Chief Nursing Executive, and Patty Cochran, Senior Vice President, Clinical Strategy, and Chief Innovation Officer. In addition, we are joined by thousands of residents from across Mississauga and Etobicoke who are joining us this evening. To ask a question live tonight, you can do so at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Once again, press 3 to ask a question at any time. We're looking for questions related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family. My name is Eric, and I'll be the moderator of the town hall this evening. During this live community telephone town hall, we encourage you to get involved and ask questions and give your opinion by voting on a few of our polling questions. Michelle D. Emanuel chose this format as it is an interactive town hall with you, which means we want to hear from you this evening. Michelle and Trillium Health Partners leadership team want to hear your feedback and opinions and have an open dialogue and discussion with you and fellow residents about how Trillium Health Partners can better serve and communicate with you about the important health issues that our families and neighbors face today. Tonight, our intention is to get as many questions from you as possible. To that effect, you can ask a question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. We're looking to get questions related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family. Once you press 3, someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Now, again, for everyone joining us, hello and welcome to this evening's Trillium Health Partners Community Telephone Town Hall Meeting. We're live tonight with Michelle D. Emanuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners. In addition, we're joined by Dr. Dante Mora, Chief of Staff, Catherine Hayward Murray, Senior Vice President, Patient Care Services, Chief Nursing Executive, and Patty Cochran, Senior Vice President, Clinical Strategy, and Chief Innovation Officer. We're also joined by thousands of residents from across Mississauga and Etobicoke who are joining us this evening. We want to remind everyone again, if you have a live question, you can ask that question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. We'll also be doing a series of polling questions this evening. You'll have a chance to vote live on your phone's keypad when those questions come up. Now, at this time, I'm going to introduce Trillium Health Partners President and CEO, Michelle D. Emanuel, so we can open up the town hall. Michelle, welcome. I'm very excited about our community telephone town hall this evening. Trillium Health Partners held a previous town hall in March to engage and get feedback from the residents that we serve. Tonight will be an opportunity to recap information from the last town hall and also to share some important information that has occurred since March. So at the moment, it seems we have thousands of residents joining us from Mississauga and Etobicoke. Michelle, please go ahead.
Good evening, Eric, and thank you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. You know, we regularly hear from our community that they want to be as healthy as they can for as long as they can. But when they require hospital services, they want to know that those services are there for them and for their family. And as you know, as we've been having this dialogue regularly over the last several years, there's much that we have done together to improve services, to bring more services to the hospital, to serve more patients each and every year. Last year, 1.6 million patients were served by Trillium Health Partners. New services in the area of cancer, children's services, chronic kidney disease, geriatric services, cardiac, and more. And you also know that our community is growing. And with that, we've also seen growing construction. Our current construction at our Credit Valley Hospital site will bring new services in the area of surgery, critical care, and emergent services. We also just opened at our Queensway site a 39-bed unit for some of our most complex patients. And we've made various improvements in wait times and those services that mean the most to you. These conversations that we have with you in these telephone town halls matter. Over the last several years, as we've been having them, we've discussed mental health. We've talked about wait times for MRIs or emergency services. We've talked about the need for better transition between hospital and home and how other services connect with the hospital to serve you best. We've even talked about how to improve the shuttle services between each of our sites to make it easier for you to get around. We take your feedback seriously, and we use that feedback to make decisions and to develop plans for new services or to improve services. And I want to thank you for that. it really does make a difference. As I said, our hospital serves 1.6 million people, and with continued growth, we also know that that stretches our services, stretches our resources. We know we need more beds in this community, and we need to upgrade the older parts of our hospital sites. Today, we serve on average about 100 more patients every day than we have the beds to do so. Over the next 10 years, and we shared this with you in the last telephone town hall, we need 548 more beds to be built on our sites to deal with growth. We have a plan to do this, and this plan has now been filed with the Government of Ontario. We are working together with them on getting the next set of approval for a project to build 548 new beds and to replace some of the old beds at our oldest parts of the hospital. A new hospital build is necessary for Mississauga and West Toronto. This will take time, but we are also dedicated to making this happen. Until then, though, we have to deal with growth, and this is our number one focus, to ensure that you have the services that are in this community when you need them. And so we are looking at ways that we can deliver our current services differently. For example, work that we're doing in our cardiac program has reduced the need to be in hospital for a longer period of time. Services that we can be delivering in your home, such as our work in home hemodialysis. I already talked about the 39 beds that we just opened at our Queensway site for complex care. And we're also halfway through a process to build 220 new long-term care beds. We're in the process of selecting our partners and our operators to do so. These are all helping us make progress today and in the near future as we plan to build a hospital and 548 new beds across our sites. I want to thank all of our patients and families for your patience and understanding as we experience this growth, and that means sometimes you have to wait for a bed if you're admitted or for a test or a service. We know that that isn't the way we want to deliver services to you, and we know that that causes you both some inconvenience when you're trying to schedule around that and some anxiousness as you're trying to ensure that you're getting the answers you need for your care. Finally, it's always an opportunity for me when I get to speak with our community to thank all of our staff, our public, our volunteers, our doctors, for the work we do together in providing health care in this community. So, Eric, that's all I wanted to say at the beginning, and I'd really like to get on to the questions now if we could.
Well, I know that we do have some live questions coming up. Quickly, I want to remind everyone joining us that we do want to hear from you this evening. This town hall is about getting, it's an opportunity to engage and get feedback from residents in the area that we serve. So if you have any questions related to Trillium Health Partners, we want to hear from you. Press 3 at any time over the course of the town hall. You'll have a chance to ask a live question. Now, Michelle, earlier I mentioned that, you know, this isn't the first town hall we've done this year. We did one back in March. Why do you think it's important for hospital CEO to hear from local residents?
Well, Eric, you know, the hospital is here to serve the community. Fundamentally, that is our number one job, to be here in service of others. And the community is investing in this hospital each and every day. And so it has to be a reflection of both what the community needs are and also a reflection of the values and the priorities that a community puts in place for its health. We can't do that in isolation. And so whether it's our telephone town halls, whether it is the work we do at our various events with our foundation, our volunteers, we have over 2,000 volunteers. They provide us with such important feedback around what is important to our community's health. And so these are such important moments for accountability, for setting priorities, and for really remaining in touch with what matters most to our community.
Now, I know we have our first live question coming up in just a second. Quickly, I want to do a polling question. So everyone joining us on the line, you can use your touchtone phone to indicate your response on the following question. Before tonight, were you aware that the hospital needs more beds in order to serve the size of the community? If yes, please press 1, and if not, please press 2. So again, before tonight, were you aware that the hospital needs more beds in order to serve the size of the community? If yes, press 1, and if not, press 2. Now we have our first live question coming up, and it will be from Bob. Bob, welcome to the town hall. You're joining us live. Please go ahead. Hi, Bob. You're joining us live on the line. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes. My question is that the parking situation has changed recently, and I have been in touch with Kathleen Sinek, and because we're deeply involved as a member of the Lions Club. We're in our 80s, and we use all three facilities, but we never know which one we need more than the other, Queensway, Sherway, or Credit Valley. Now, Kathleen mentioned that the parking had arranged for a pass for $150, which is exorbitant, to pay out at one time. We like the $70 thing. But to be used at all three sites, not just one.
So, Bob, thank you for your question. And let me just comment first on parking, and then I'll get to specifically your question. So first off, I just want to acknowledge to our listeners that I know parking has become a challenge at our various sites. Given what I said around the growth we've seen, parking is really quite symbolic of that growth. And it should not be a barrier to access to care. And so we did look at, in consultation with our patient advisory group, with certain patient populations, we have instituted some changes in our parking regime. And what I can tell you is that pass is actually usable at each of the sites, Bob. And so if for some reason you've purchased a pass and you were not able to then use it at the other site, I would ask you to either contact my office, and we would be happy to sort that out for you and reimburse you for your troubles. But also you can talk to our parking office, and they will work that out for you. But the passes do work at each site. And so to your point, if you purchased a 10-use pass, which is $70, that's $7 a day, and that parking pass is good for a 24-hour period, and that's any 24-hour period, not just over one day, and it should work at each of our three sites. And if that doesn't work for somebody who's listening, then please let us know, and we will address that concern and that issue for you.
Bob, thank you very much for that question. For everyone joining us, we do want to hear from you. If you have a question related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family, please press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time. We want to get to your questions this evening. So we have another live question ready to go. This one's from Marie. Marie, you're joining us live. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good evening. My name is Marie, and I'm calling to find out if you mentioned about preventative measures in healthcare. I would like to know, why is it that the vendors within the hospital do not provide healthy meals either for visitors or staff? For example, Tim Hortons, which hardly has healthy choices for people with heart problems or diabetics.
So, Marie, thank you for your question. So we, over the last several years, have made a number of changes, actually, to what I'll call our retail vendors of food. And at our various sites have been working with vendors to, in fact, offer choice, and choice that includes healthy choice. The, for example, two of our vendors that come to mind are both Drexies and Pumpernickels, which provide a number of choices, and also in particular, you can ask for very specific requirements if you have them. They make things from scratch, and so I think that's just two examples. But the other thing, Maria, I just want to say is that this is something we're always thinking about, and we are just in the process right now of going out yet again to look at what options we can provide, not just our patients and family members, but our staff as well. That is also something our staff regularly say to us, is they want choice and they want healthy choice. And so that is something that I believe we've made some progress on, and there's more progress to come.
Marie, thank you very much for that question. We have another live question. Now, this one's going to be from Valerie. Valerie, welcome. You're joining us live.
Hello. I live in the South Etobicoke area where there's a large townhouse development going in, and I was wanting to know if the Queensway or the Sureway site, if there are plans to expand services due to the increase in the population that would be served by those hospitals.
So when part of what I was speaking about earlier about needing to look at a project, construction project and development, certainly the Queensway is part of that. When we talk about needing 548 new beds over the next 10 years and also replacing some of our older facilities and refurbishing them, that absolutely does include the Queensway site. But I also want to say that our three sites work together. And so where some of our sites have leading cardiac programs and other sites have leading cancer programs or neurology programs, we work together as a collective set of hospitals. And so I think one can always expect, if you're living in the West Etobicoke area, that the Queensway provides some of that services, but it really is the total set of hospital services that are available to you. And our plan does include expanding all three sites over time.
Valerie, thank you very much for that question. Now, I just want to quickly remind everyone that we want to hear from you. If you have a question, press 3 at any time on this evening's Town Hall. Of course, this is Trillium Health Partners Community Telephone Town Hall Meeting, and we want to hear from you this evening. So press 3 at any time if you have a live question you'd like to ask related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family. We're now going to go to our next live question from Brian. Brian, welcome to the Town Hall. You're joining us live.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello, how are you? To begin with, I have the utmost respect for Trillium. Personally, I've had to use your people, but my mother, my father, my wife, blah, blah. My question is, though, a statement was made about creating 220 more long-term care beds. That's not nearly enough. Apparently, there's like 5 million baby boomers coming through the system. Where are they going to go? That's my question.
Well, Brian, first off, thank you so much for calling in and for your comments about the services that you've received. And, Brian, I could not agree with you more. 220 long-term care beds is not enough for this community. And I know if my colleague Bill McLeod was here from our local health integration network, he would also agree. And he's working very hard in a number of ways to bring more long-term care beds to this community and also more specialty beds for those patients who require special services beyond the hospital. And so our 220 long-term care beds are a start. I agree they're not enough, and I can assure you that there's a lot of work going on to advance that beyond those 220. So thank you so much for recognizing that.
Brian, thanks again for that question. Now we're going to go to another polling question. So for everyone joining us on the line, you can indicate your response by using your touchtone phone for the following question. Based on what you've heard tonight, do you agree that Mississauga and West Toronto need more hospital beds to care for our growing community? If yes, please press 1, and if not, please press 2. So again, based on what you've heard so far tonight, do you agree that Mississauga and West Toronto need more hospital beds to care for our growing community? If yes, please press 1, and if no, please press 2. Now we have another live question. This one's going to be coming from Tammy. Tammy, welcome to the Town Hall. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. So I understand your patient beds shortage issue, and I understand there is some volunteer program, and I'm wondering, are you guys are considering some community involvement program or volunteering program to improve the shortage? Or, in other words, what I can do as a citizen or community member to help with that?
Well, thank you so much for that question. And so let me start with a couple of thoughts on that. We do have a number of ways in which our community can become involved in the hospital in supporting patient care and volunteering, and I'd encourage you and anyone to contact our volunteer services office and go through that process, and they will try to match some of your interest in volunteering with what's available in the hospital. As I said, we have some 2,000 volunteers. The other way our community can become involved are things like we're doing tonight, becoming involved in this telephone town hall. For example, when you're answering those polling questions that we're using, that is important information that we use and we share as we are making our arguments and our case for more services for this community with the Ontario government. And so it's very helpful when you become involved in sharing your views. You can also become involved in our foundation and in the events that we have. And with that comes an opportunity to learn more about the other opportunities in the hospital, like volunteering, et cetera. I would say lastly, to be informed. We just put in our Mississauga News and our Etobicoke Guardian an insert that provides a lot of information about what's currently happening at the hospital, and I'd encourage you to read that, and that may also spark some ideas about what would make sense for you in terms of getting involved.
Tammy, thank you for that question. Now we have another live question coming up quickly for everyone joining us. Please press 3 on your phone's keypad if you have a question related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family. So again, if you'd like to ask a live question, you can do so at any time by pressing 3. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. We're now going to go to Gail. Gail, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I just have a quick comment. I've used home health care before, specifically St. Elizabeth, and they've just been absolutely fabulous. My concern would be why I've gone to walk-in clinics and then I've had to be referred to the hospital who then refer me for home health care. I'm just concerned why a doctor at a walk-in clinic can't refer for home care.
Thank you for the question. I'm going to ask Dr. Mora to answer that if I could.
Hi, Gail. It's Dr. Mora, and thank you for your question. I think there's two important parts. Is the first thing is that when you're using walk-in services, there's less of a connection with your family doctor. And so one of the things that's very important in your health is actually having access to a family doctor who knows your entire history and has a relationship with you where they'll be seeing you on a regular basis. And so what I think you're going to find is you'll get referred less often to the hospital if you have a provider who will provide that comprehensive care for you. And that's one of the things that we would certainly recommend for you. And I think you'll find a higher and better continuity of care. I would recommend that you call our patient relations line at 905-848-7164 because they can give you some ideas as to how to get attached to a family doctor. And then I think the second item is around your comments around home care. We definitely know that having people get the services in their community and having access to those services are really important in keeping you out of hospital and ensuring that continuity of care. But I think the most important thing is actually having that continuity with your family doctor, and that's what I'd recommend. And I think you'll find a bit of a different experience.
Gail, thank you very much for that question. We're going to quickly do another survey question. So for everyone joining us on the line, we want to get you to use your touchtone phone to indicate your response on the following question. What matters most to you about the care that you receive? If it is convenient hours of operation, please press 1. If it is shorter wait times, please press 2. If it is good communication and coordination, please press 3. And if it is that the care that is close to home, please press 4. So again, what matters most to you about the care that you receive? If it is convenient hours of operation, please press 1. If it is shorter wait times, please press 2. If it is good communication and coordination, please press 3. And if it is that the care is close to home, please press 4. Now we have another live question coming from Janice. Janice, you're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Good evening. My question is, if today's technology such as MRIs and CT scans are so important for the diagnosis of people's certain health conditions, why are we waiting 2 and 3 months to get those when they're so important?
So, Janice, thank you for asking this question. This is a really important area of service that we provide. And what I can tell you is when the two hospitals merged actually several years ago, almost 5 years ago now, we were seeing a very high wait time for MRIs, some 100 days to wait. And we saw by virtue of the merger and being able to really use all of our resources as effectively as we could, we saw that come right down. But as growth has come in again, and as that growth has just been going up year after year, we've started to see those wait times go up, and you are exactly right that they have, in some cases, people are waiting far too long. And so what I want to assure you is, first and foremost, that when an emergency MRI is needed, that MRI is made available. And what I'd like to do is ask Catherine Hayward-Murray, who is our Senior Vice President, really, of the operations of the hospital, to comment on the other things that we're doing around wait times to get them down, not just for MRI, but also for our CAT scans.
So thanks, Michelle, and thanks, Janice, for this question. It's something that we really need to be talking about on a continuous basis because it is a reality. Our supply is far greater, our demand is far greater than what our supply is for both our MRIs and our CT scans. And so just to reiterate what Michelle said, with our high activity in our emerge department, where we see over 273,000 patients a year, as well as our very large oncology regional program where we serve the entire region, we do see an increased demand for both of those tests. And so we're continuously looking at ways that we can become more efficient, but always wanting to keep safety at the heart of what we do for our patients. So whereby we're looking at more efficient ways of providing the tests, we also need to maintain that we're providing them in a very safe and effective way. And so as Michelle mentioned, what we're doing is optimizing our 3 sites to be able to deliver those, looking at better booking systems so that we can book and reduce duplication. Sometimes we find that our patients will book tests at different sites, and that actually is less efficient for us as we have cancellations and not be able to meet the demands. The other thing that we do on a continuous basis, and we actually have a meeting booked next week, is with our partners at Halton Healthcare and William Osler, where we're looking at best practices and how we can best optimize even beyond our own region for ways that we can best support the needs of our patients. But again, to emphasize what Michelle said, if an emergency test is needed, we attend to the emergencies and we do get those done in a timely way. So again, I thank you very much for the question.
Janice, thank you again for that question. For everyone joining us, we do want to hear from you. So if you have a live question you'd like to ask related to Trillium Health Partners and how we can best serve you and your family, press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time, and someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. We're going now to Mary for a question. Mary, welcome. You're joining us live.
Hi. I actually have 2 questions. The first question that I have to ask is, I'm curious as to the procedures in the emergency ward. First of all, about how possibly elderly people or people that are bringing small children into emergency can be fast-tracked, because it's just too difficult. Certainly, I just experienced this less than 2 weeks ago, bringing my elderly mother to the Trillium, Mississauga, the Queensway, and here Ontario site. although it was just a very long and drawn-out process. Often they have to stay on gurneys. It's very, very difficult on an elderly person to be able to manage that. And having three children of my own, I also know that it would be equally difficult for a small child. So I'm wondering, has that ever been addressed? The other question I have is that having just, as I said, been in an experience like that, you know, I was alone with my elderly parent, my elderly mother, and she had to be in a wheelchair and be and have me with her the entire time. So there was no option to park in a parking garage and be up six levels or whatever and manage her at the same time. I went out and spoke to three security guards, but that communication breakdown took place, and I ended up with a ticket, even though I'd spoken to three. The fourth one didn't know about this information. So that is a really an actually fairly big issue, because if you're alone with a small child or an elderly person, you're the only person with them, there needs to be some kind of a solution about what to do with your car, because you are not in a position to take the time to park far away. That's the reason why it's called emergency, because it's an emergency situation. So that was an additional stress, that I suffered, and certainly my mom, about, you know, what happened to my car. You know, I got a ticket. I have to worry about that at the same time. So I really think that it would be maybe a possible, might be just more signage about what to do if you're one of these kinds of people, who to speak to, what to do when you get inside the facility, the hospital, that sort of thing. So that is what I'm asking tonight, those two questions.
So Mary, thank you so much for your comment. I'm going to answer that last piece, and then I'm going to ask Dr. Moore to talk a little bit more about the emergency department. So let me just say, on your suggestions around parking, this is one of the reasons we love to do these telephone town halls. Great suggestion. I do believe there is more that we can do at our sites when people are coming in and bringing in, whether it's an elderly patient, a child, or just someone. You know that moment is filled with so many different emotions, and you're trying to deal with getting somebody where they need to be. You've got a car, et cetera. And so we need to think about how to make that part of the experience one where people are safe, but also where we take that stress, added stress, off your plate. And so I think you've given us some suggestions, and our commitment will be to report back to our community on what our thinking is around that. And so thank you. And signage is one, but I think there are some other things we can do as well. I just want to say, with respect to your being ticketed, I'd ask you either, again, to call my office or the public, our patient relations office at our site, and they will work with you to address that, particularly where it has been in an issue where you've been trying to get into the eMERGE. As I said at the beginning of the town hall, parking cannot be an access to getting good or a barrier to getting good care. So please do call my office or our patient relations office, and we'll be happy to discuss that with you further. I'm going to ask Dr. Moore to talk about the emergency department processes.
Hi, Mariette. Thanks for your comments on waiting in the eMERGE and the challenges of waiting with young children or with the elderly or frail patients. This is something that is a really important issue for our community, and I want to start off with some of the things that Michelle talked about at the beginning. Is we have a very rapidly growing community, and part of what we'll need our community support for is building out more capacity and more beds and more services in our community, and there's a commitment at our LIN and our organization, and we're trying to move that forward because that's really part of solving that wait time issue. The second part of your question is really about what are we doing now about that, and how do we actually triage and deal with that? So we have a triage system, and we triage by severity, and everyone who comes to the emergency in their frame is having an emergent situation, and so we have a standard triage system of how we allocate severity and based on timing and different diagnoses and the severity of the illness. What we work very hard to is actually ensure people get to the right place so they can get the right service. So if you're having a mental health emergency, there's a mental health zones and getting people streamed through the organization. And this organization has been a pioneer in creating different zones to be able to move people forward. If you come to our Credit Valley site, you'll see that there's construction happening, and it's actually in our Emerge where there will be dedicated zones for pediatric patients, young children, and for elderly patients, because the more we're able to get people into the right zone, even when they're having emergency, the better care we'll provide in a more timely way. So hopefully that answers your question around we triage by severity, and we're working very hard in our current structure to make sure people get to the right place, and so we provide that care. And there's a lot of work happening, including some current construction, to take that to the next step and create truly leading practices in zones for pediatric mental health, geriatrics, and other services.
Mary, thank you very much for those questions. For everyone joining us, again, we do want to hear from you. Press 3 if you have a live question that you'd like to ask. We're going to go now to Joanne. Joanne, welcome. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is about mental health. I'm just wondering, it seems like we are letting down the mental health community. There's so many issues going on, and I get very distressed when I read about CAMH letting people out that certainly aren't cured. I'm just wondering if there's any research going on, plans for development for helping mental health issues in the hospital at all?
So Joanne, thank you so much for your question. And this is an area of great importance because we're seeing some of the greatest growth in demand in our mental health programs and services. And so let me talk a little bit about that, and then I'm going to ask Patty Cochran, who really leads a lot of our innovative thinking and development of new programs, et cetera, to talk a little bit about some specific initiatives in the research area, et cetera. So with respect to mental health programs, we, in our hospital specifically, we are looking and have been working with our team to look at where do we go over the next several years in this program and how do we continue to evolve and change that program to really meet those needs. And part of that is the importance of partnership and the work that we're doing, not just in the hospital, but for those patients who go back into the community and come back and forth between the hospital and the community, making that much more an integrated set of services and approaches and supports. And so partnerships, whether it's with our schools as it relates to our children with mental health needs, or it's the work we're doing in partnership with volunteer programs, such as our Credit Valley Run program or Cameron Helps program, which is another run program, or the work we're doing with the Local Health Integration Network, and all of the various mental health services in our community, making sure that we're tying those together so that they are support systems and are easy to navigate and there when people are needing them. The other thing that we've been doing is also really thinking through where there are really complex needs in both mental health and in more physical needs that people may be experiencing, and we refer to this as medical psychiatry needs. And that's where I'd like Patty to say a few things, because that, again, is a growing need that we're seeing more and more, that we not are just treating the mind but also the body at the same time. Patty, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Thanks for the question, and it's a really great question to ask. Oftentimes, mental health is treated in a silo, and we don't look at the whole person needs. Often, we separate their mental health needs from their physical health needs. There's a partnership right now in Ontario with the University of Toronto, CAMH, SickKids, and Trillium Health Partners to look at reducing the stigma of mental health, to integrate the care and management of patients so it's looking at a whole person, both their mental health needs and their physical health needs together. We're looking at doing some research and evaluation about making changes both within the children population, in-hospital population and seniors, so right across the continuum of care, about interventions that might make a difference of intersecting both mental health needs of patients as well as their physical health needs. And I'll give you one quick example, looking at adolescent diabetic children and really screening them for depression. And we find that depression has a big impact on their ability to manage their diabetes, as well as their school and relationships outside in the community. So there is a lot of research and work being done in this particular area. So thanks for your interest. I'd say the other thing, your question was, you know, what could you do in the community? We're also looking at something called Mental Health First Aid. And what that is a program to teach community lay people, volunteers who want to learn how to be able to intervene more appropriately with this patient population. And so that's available through the Canadian Mental Health Society. So there is a lot of research and interest in this particular area. It's definitely of need. And we've been very surprised, not surprised, but I guess delighted with some of the results we're starting to see. We're also we also understand that education is really important. We've developed a curriculum or a certification program for our current people that are delivering care to change the stigma and the mindset. And we're also training new students and medical students on how to view mental health in a different way. I think partnerships in the community are also really critical, and I know the police force has been partnering in Toronto for a long time. So, yes, I think we're just starting to do the work, and we need to spend a lot more time and energy around mental health. So thanks very much for your question.
Joanne, thank you very much for that question. We're quickly going to do another survey question. So everyone joining us, you can use your touchtone phone to indicate your response on this question. What do you want to hear more about from Trillium Health Partners? If it is programs and services at the hospital, please press 1. If it is research and innovation on the latest treatments, press 2. If it is tips on how to stay healthy, press 3. And if it's our plans to expand current sites and the future of the hospital, press 4. So again, what do you want to hear more about from Trillium Health Partners? If it is programs and services at the hospital, please press 1. If it is research and innovation on the latest treatments, please press 2. If it is tips on how to stay healthy, please press 3. And if it is our plans to expand our current sites and the future of the hospital, please press 4. We're now going to go to our next live question. This one's from Snail. Snail, welcome to the town hall. Please go ahead.
Catherine, good evening. And my question is that while we are definitely moving towards coping up with the increasing demand, what are the initiatives that we are taking to kind of inculcate a healthy lifestyle, healthy choices in the age group that is still young, like students and teenagers, so that eventually we don't run out of the demand versus supply gap, at least after, say, 10, 20 years, we have a controlled demand increase rather than just trying to meet the demands. I'm sure there would be a lot of innovative programs. It's just that I'm not aware of.
A great question. And you know, our mission at Trillium Health Partners is really about healthy communities and promoting healthy communities. And so we work a lot in partnership, first and foremost, with public health. Their mandate is really quite specific in that area, and we support in any way we can. For example, last week, the Associate Medical Officer of Health, myself, the Chief of Police, and others got our flu shot together. And I'd really encourage the public to get your flu shot and other immunizations and vaccinations. We do work with a group of our community agencies and leaders in our Healthy City Stewardship Council, where we're looking at all of the determinants of health. And for example, we just finished a report this past year that dealt with the importance of employment and the importance of youth employment as one of the attributes that leads to healthy lifestyles, et cetera, and ensures that there isn't breakdowns in other socioeconomic areas. We have work we do in smoking cessation, and we have work that we also do in the area of children's health. We have a KidFit program. We do work with new moms in terms of the importance of breastfeeding. And there's a number of things in this area. But I think we all know that prevention is absolutely part of our solution to both the demand on services, but also to ensuring that people truly can live as healthy as they can for as long as they can. And so I think anything that we can continue to do in partnership is key to being successful in this area.
Snail, thank you very much for that question. We're going to go directly to another live question coming from Kelly. Kelly, welcome to the town hall. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering, with regards to customer service, I'm not a regular visitor of the hospital, but the times I've brought my children to urgent care, I've seen a lot of patients confused about process, whether it be signage or lack of communication from the staff about process, or even patients frustrated with wait times. And I've been witness to some staff giving curt and condescending replies, just short of eye rolls. So as a mother, it makes me question myself and the necessity of my visit sometimes. So I understand that they've heard these questions day in and day out, but what kind of sensitivity training is offered to staff? And just having said that, I've also experienced great things from wonderful, caring, helpful staff as well. But I'm just curious about, for the others, what kind of training sessions are offered to those who deal with the general public?
So thank you for that. And Kelly, one of the things I certainly learned while being the CEO of the hospital is that some of the most important things that we can do actually don't cost any money. And you've hit on one of them, which is the importance of how we interact with each other and the importance of really truly understanding and being in that moment when you're communicating and working through whether it's an assessment on someone's health or problem solving or providing information to that person. And so one of the things that we have just started, and I do just want to caution by saying we're just beginning our work in this area. Over the last couple of months, we've done a fair bit of training with our leaders in the hospital who will now work with their staff and employees and volunteers in what we're calling our AIDET program, A-I-D-E-T. And that really is a process that we're using around communication, and you use the word the sensitivity of that communication. The A stands for to, you know, acknowledge and address the person and really be looking at the individual and not be diverted as you're having those conversations, so that you're very much in that moment with them, to really ensure that you're introducing yourself, who you are, what your role is, why you're there to work with them, and to give them some sense of the duration of that interaction and how long the procedure may take or you may be waiting for something. To really ensure that as you're going through that process with us and receiving your service or waiting for something, that we're really explaining it in clear language and that we're taking you through that and asking if you have questions to ensure that that explanation, that understanding is clear. And always, it's important to thank you and to really appreciate, as we've been going through that journey with you, to thank you for your patience when you've had to wait, or to thank you for understanding if something maybe hasn't been as clear and we've had to work that through with you. So that is something we are just about to roll out. We have ambassadors throughout the hospital who will be working with our staff. And one of the things that we'll be reporting on, and we are tracking as part of this, is our patient satisfaction, not just with the care they receive, but with the experience they have. And so we'll be reporting on that. On our website, we always report on patient experience, and you can start to watch how that moves as we introduce this program.
Kelly, thank you very much for that question. We have another live question. This one's going to be from Lee. Lee, welcome to the town hall. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate Trillium on a wonderful response. I've had the privilege of or been fortunate in being able to take avail of your services in all three locations, as well as my my children and my grandchildren. Anyway, one of the areas that causes me pause is the area of home care. Home care seemed to be one of the last things that was available on a personal basis. When I had some major surgery and there was a problem, I wasn't able to leave the hospital as quickly as I wanted to, mainly because of an infection, and the wounds would not heal properly, and I suggested maybe home care would be an appropriate solution. And I found the response from the hospital very lukewarm to recommending home care. After a lot of discussion and pushing and prodding, finally somebody agreed that it would be probably appropriate. They'd try it out, and finally I was able to get about 5 weeks once or twice a week to be able to change dressings and all that for me instead of taking up a valuable hospital bed. And I'm just wondering, why isn't the hospital doing more in this area to free up hospital beds that are very valuable? Because home care must be a lot more inexpensive than taking up a full-time bed at a hospital. That's one of the reasons why I'm calling, is to hopefully we're looking at ways and means of employing other methods to free up beds.
Lee, it's Catherine. I'm the Vice President of Patient Care Services, and so I'm really pleased to answer your question. You've hit the nail on the head in terms of how we're going to be dealing with our capacity issues in the future, and that's through better partnerships with those who can provide home care or services out into the community. So just to share with you on a daily basis, we meet with our CCAC partners. So those are the folks that are accountable and responsible for providing care in the homes, and they partner with agencies that then would provide whatever services are required, whether that's a personal support worker, whether that's a nurse, whether that's a physiotherapist. And so on a daily basis, we have meetings around all of our patients that are approaching discharge or are close to discharge, that we can expedite or get them home sooner and safer with home care. So that is something that we do, and we're vigilant on that and monitoring that on a continuous basis. The other thing that we've implemented as well is at a senior level, the senior leaders of both the hospital and the CCAC and our LIN CEO are meeting to review the cases that we're having difficulty in getting them through the system and out into their homes or into long-term care facilities where they know that that's the best place for their care. So these are things that we're doing on an ongoing basis. I would say it's part of everything we're doing daily, and we are grateful that you asked the question, so thank you.
Thank you very much for that question. We're quickly going to do another survey question. So everyone joining us on the line, use your touchtone phone to indicate your response. How do you want to hear from us? If you would say it's via a newspaper or flyer, please press 1. If you'd say it's email or social media, please press 2. For television or radio, please press 3. And if it's while visiting the hospital, please press 4. So how do you want to hear from us? If you'd say newspaper or flyer, please press 1. If it is email or social media, please press 2. If it is television or radio, please press 3. And if it is while visiting the hospital, please press 4. We are now going to go to another live question. It's going to be from Pat. Pat, welcome to the town hall. Please go ahead. Hi, Pat. You're joining us live on the line. Please go ahead with your question. Hello, Pat. Are you there? Okay, we'll try and get Pat back in just a second. But in the meanwhile, we have another live question. This one is from Nina. Nina, welcome to the town hall. Please go ahead. Hello, Nina. Are you there?
Oh, yes.
Hi, please go ahead with your question.
Yes. I have two questions. One is the translation services. My mom is a cancer patient at Trillium Oncology Clinic. She has a regular appointment to see the doctor. I found the service it's very helpful when she has a translator from either the community volunteer or it's assigned from the hospital. And the translator does a good job. It's better than that I take off for one day work to escort my mom to see the doctor, because sometimes I cannot fully translate some of the medicine medical terms. But I don't always, I'm not always able to get such a service. My question is there a official program in the hospital to secure such a service when my mom needs it?
Nina, thanks so much for that question. We do have a formalized translation service at our sites. You do need to let the caregiver know that you need a translation service, and we are able to access that at all times. So would encourage you to do that. And if you're not satisfied with that service, please let us know. We're always trying to improve. And so if you let our patient relations department know, we can work directly with you to make sure that that is happening. So thank you for that question.
Nina, thank you very much for that question. We are going to go to another live question. This one will be from Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. My question is regarding communication primarily. I think most of the questions seem to be centered on people not knowing exactly where to go to access the services they need in the quickest possible manner. I just wonder if there's any new digital media or new signage programs that might be available for people to understand, perhaps before they get to the hospital, where the least expensive, quickest path to getting accurate care would be. Because a person's perception of the services they're receiving and their expectations could probably be better met if they understood which is the right hospital to go to. Could they go to a clinic? Where's the least expensive place to go to access the care? And ideally, it would have a positive impact on funding. There's a lot of tremendous programs available, but it seems each of the questions have focused to some degree on people not understanding where to go at the right time.
Jennifer, thank you for your question, and this is an area where I know there's more work we can do and we have to do and we can do better. I do think there's an opportunity technology does provide us to really help people understand their wayfinding at the various sites. I also think your suggestion around making sure people understand which services are available where. And for example, I know our website has that, but I think there's a way that that could be even more easily and readily available on the website. But also even one of the polling questions that we talked about earlier was how do people want to get information? And I know one of the things we talked about was newspapers, for example, and email. And so can we use those mediums to sort of push out information that helps people understand where things are available and what is available. In our insert in the Etobicoke Guardian and the Mississauga News, there is actually a piece in there that also talks about, because Jennifer, you also mentioned other services, not just hospitals, and in terms of how to access family doctors, how to get information online, on the phone, in the emergency department. So there is some work that we've done for sure, but there's more work we can do. And this will be an area of focus for us, particularly over the next 6 months, because we have been looking at our various vehicles to communicate, and we are looking to really improve them and upgrade them.
Jennifer, Jennifer, thank you very much for that question. Now, Michelle, we have had a lot of good questions tonight. We're just about reaching the end of the event. What are your thoughts about some of the feedback that we got on tonight's town hall?
Well, Eric, I mean, I think we got such rich feedback, and there were two or three really important suggestions, whether it was translation, whether it was our last question that related to how can we ensure people know where services are and how to access them, the question that related to parking, and some ideas around how we can make particularly that moment where people are coming in with potential patients in an emergency situation, how do we make that moment less stressful and easier on them as it relates to parking? And so those are just three that come to mind, but there were so many other, both from the questions that asked, but also some of the suggestions that were made that I think we can take back and really begin to put them into action. I also know that the polling questions, which we will share in with the public and the community tomorrow or the next day, we'll send those results out to the community as we always do. Those polling questions provided just amazingly rich information about what's important to you, how you want to receive your services, which services matter to you most, whether it's issues of wait time or whether it's issues of how far you travel. All of that information you provided us helps us make better decisions. So, Eric, I think it's been tremendously helpful to us. I want to thank all of our listeners, the thousands of people who have called in, who took your personal time to actually help all of us improve our community health. And we're so grateful that you join us at these events. And we want to continue this conversation, not just through telephone town halls, but through all of the various ways that we communicate. Talk Trillium starts up again in the new year on Rogers Cable. And Patty Cochran, who's the host of Talk Trillium, will be there. And that's another opportunity. So thank you so much. If you'd like to continue to get involved, please leave your contact information at the end of this call. You can also visit our website, trilliumhealthpartners.ca, or send us an email at public.affairs@trilliumhealthpartners.ca. Eric, thank you so much, and thank you to our community for joining us this evening.
Thank you again to everyone for joining us on this evening's town hall. We want to remind you that if you have any questions or want to share your opinions, you can do so by leaving a voicemail at the conclusion of this evening's town hall. We're looking to get as much feedback as possible. So again, you can leave a voicemail at the end of the town hall once it has concluded. Just leave your comments, name, and contact information in the message that you leave. Thank you again for joining us this evening, and have a great night.